The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Massive. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm gonna do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate, and I'm gonna start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America, and they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can, and I'm really pumped to see what the future holds.
Here was just some of the reaction to Carl Nassib's announcement yesterday. His head coach, John Gruden, said, quote, "I learned a long time ago what makes a man different is what makes a man great." From Cardinals defensive lineman J.J. Watt, "Good for you, Carl. Glad you feel comfortable enough to share, and hopefully someday these types of announcements will no longer be considered breaking news." His former teammate at Penn State, Saquon Barkley, tweeted, "Much respect, Britta." And Pro Football Hall of Famer Warren Moon tweeted, "Really proud of Carl Nassib, the first active football player to ever do so. I played with several guys who never were comfortable enough to go public. They were great teammates, obviously very talented." Welcome to NFL Live alongside Marcus Spears and Mina Kimes and Dan Graziano. I am Field Yates, and we'll dive right into the news that was announced late during our show yesterday. Mina, about 24 hours later, what's been your reaction for how well this news is being received around the league?
Field, it's wonderful. It's really heartening to see. And I was struck by what J.J. Watt said because he echoed what Carl himself said in a statement, which is that he looks forward to the day when this sort of announcement is no longer needed. And, you know, that got me thinking. I saw a lot of people responding to the announcement with the question of, well, why is this news? Well, it's news for a couple reasons. One, he is truly breaking ground, first active player to come out and to do so publicly like this. It is historic, but also it's meaningful for a lot of people. Like, it might not be meaningful for you, whoever you are, and that's fine, but I can guarantee you there are many, many people out there who heard this news and maybe felt accepted in this sport for the first time. That is incredibly impactful. And to see Carl embraced by the community, by stars both past and present, it feels like a sea change in the NFL, like the start of something great, and it makes me really happy to see it.
I think the thing most impressive sitting here after it broke yesterday is how much of this is not about Carl Nassib, right? He came out, but he came out in order to let his light shine for other people to feel comfortable and feel that freedom that everyone should feel about being exactly who they are. So that's the thought that I have. And it goes along with a long history in this country. There has to be groundbreakers in order to make a whole generation comfortable about who they are and in their own skin. So that's what I applaud more than anything. Carl Nassib is fine with who he is as a person. We are not up here to debate about why he did it or what should he have done it. That wasn't the reason he did it. He did it so his light would shine for a lot of other people that are afraid or uncomfortable to do this, and gave them the passage in order to say and be exactly who they are. And that's why he deserves credit.
Yeah, and not just, Marcus, not just people inside the NFL either, but, I mean, these guys, as you know, are such public figures, right? Like, what they do and what they say and what they represent means something to people who are viewers and fans. And so look, the Trevor Project exists because of the struggles that young people have with coming out, with coming, you know, to terms with going public, with who they actually are inside. And so You know, it's great to see this, great to see the donation, great that the NFL just announced it's matching his donation to the Trevor Project. Outstanding. But, yeah, I think the most important thing is just if there are people out there who don't think it's okay to be openly who you are, this helps with that, and it'll definitely hopefully make it easier for at least someone and hopefully a lot of people.
Well, can only sometimes only take just one person to make a significant movement, and Carl Nassib seems to be primed to do exactly that. As a matter of fact, Adam Schefter recently tweeted that both yesterday and today, the top-selling jersey on Fanatics.com is Carl Nassib. So it must be great for him to know there are so many people who are behind him and supporting his decision to make what has certainly been a difficult private life more public just 24 hours ago. Pivoting to Lamar Jackson, who is entering his fourth season and recently had this to say, quote, "It's really not the off season anymore. For us, I'll say, we've just got to keep grinding and staying in shape. People are always saying we throw short, intermediate routes and stuff like that, little 5-yard, 10-yard routes. But we had some chances last year. We hit some of them. But we're just trying to be more consistent this year." To be more precise, Lamar Jackson hit on 38% of his deep passes last season, which was 24th in the NFL, below the league average. But it wasn't for a lack of trying. 12% of Jackson's total passes went at least 20 yards downfield, the sixth highest percentage in the league last year. I mean, he had a chance to rewatch some of Lamar's deep throws last year. What stands out in watching them, and is there room for improvement for Lamar in a key part of his passing game?
Yeah, Field, it was interesting because, you know, the deep ball has never been the greatest strength of Lamar's game, but he was better throwing the ball downfield in 2019 during his MVP season. And rewatching all of his 20-yard-plus throws this morning, I was trying to identify, you know, what might be happening, what could be the cause for why his performance dipped. It's not arm strength. He can throw it downfield. I think something that stands out when you watch a lot of these overthrows is the likelihood that Lamar Jackson doesn't trust his receiving group. He doesn't attempt that many tight window throws. I think some of his inaccuracy stems from the fact that he's worried that they're not going to win at the catch point. That is not a strength of Hollywood's game, and I think it's why it's so important that for all of the speed that they do have, they augmented that group of receivers with Sammy Watkins signing him in this offseason, drafting Rashad Bateman, who you guys know I love, out of Minnesota, just so that Hollywood and Willie Snead last year, they're not the only options outside of Mark Andrews throwing downfield, because it's all about trust for Lamar Jackson. He needs more trust in his group to make those types of catches.
And not only that, Mina, not only trust with those guys, but trust that the coaching staff is going to give him enough looks in order for him to feel comfortable every time he releases the ball on a deep route. Listen, Lamar Jackson can throw the football. I think we've gotten past that argument. Everybody is in agreement that he can push the ball down the field if need be. But it's like asking the three-point shooter, don't shoot for the first three quarters, but when it's crunch time and we need you, I need you to be able to hit four or five in the fourth quarter. That's not realistic. And this is what Greg Roman was alluding to when he said we need to evolve this passing game. Nobody's telling the Baltimore Ravens to change philosophically what they do on the ground. But you have to have this element when needed in order to win a Super Bowl. Like, this is what this team goal should be. This is attainable for them. And if they continue to lack in the progression of a passing game and depend on the run game and Lamar Jackson to make these out of pocket plays, that is not going to successfully lead them in ultimately where they want to get to. So this is not only about Lamar Jackson gaining that trust with his wide receivers. This is about a coaching staff as well, putting emphasis on the passing game and allowing that run game to give them opportunities for Lamar Jackson to feel more and more comfortable as this season goes along, pushing the ball downfield. So when we get to the point of next season and the Baltimore Ravens are having success, and 1 week they rush for 295 yards and 4 touchdowns, don't get it twisted and believe that that is going to be the way that they're going to do all season long and win a Super Bowl. It's not going to happen. Evolve the passing game by concepts, by guys that Lamar trusts, but also getting enough reps and putting them in game time situations so it's not new and it's not pressure when he has to do it.
That's why I think the offseason is the biggest key to the necessary development of the Ravens offense this year. Go back to last year. Yes, Lamar Jackson was coming off of an MVP season, but he was 23. And the Ravens had plans for his further development and ascension that they really didn't have the time or the ability to put into place because there wasn't an offseason. There weren't preseason games. I think you saw the Ravens offense develop and flourish later in the season, but I don't know that there's a team out there that was more affected, a top team out there that was more affected by the lack of an offseason than this one, because they weren't able to put in what they wanted to put in that would have been in addition to all the great things he did in 2019. So it's not just trust. I think it's also time on task. And I think the ability of the coaching staff to work with Lamar Jackson on whatever it is that he needs to continue to get better at age 24 will be a big part of the story as the Ravens head into this season.
Well, Dan, you mentioned the coaching staff. I think it's also worth noting that David Culley, who was their passing game coordinator, he's gone. He's now the head coach in Houston. They brought in two new coaches to help with the passing attack. Keith Williams, who is a wide receivers coach, has worked with Devontae Adams. And then T. Martin, who we know from, you know, just being everywhere, frankly. And I think that's going to be a key part in, again, advancing this passing game, which did take a step back last year.
Well, and also to be noticed about, or to be mentioned about Lamar Jackson, he is, of course, now eligible for a contract extension. So whether his improvement in the passing game takes place or not, he could very well be paid by the time training camp rolls around.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
All-Pro Von Miller hosted his fifth annual Pass Rush Summit last weekend in Las Vegas. 9-time Pro Bowler DeMarcus Ware was also there as he helped Miller out, along with some of the league's up-and-coming pass rushers. Here's an all-access sneak peek.
Appreciate all y'all for coming, man. This is a link and learn, you know, opportunity. You know, it's not just the Von Miller Coach Clinic. It's for all of us to get here and learn something from each other, man. We've been doing it for a while, and I felt like it paid a lot of dividends for everybody, and I just wanted to keep it going, and here we are today.
The guard or the tackle will be like this, or like look like this. I like to get as many clues as I can to get a great jump. When you get a true one-on-one, you gotta have a good inside move. And for me, it's always been a spin. I'm getting up the field. Like I said, I'm anticipating the snap count. I'm getting up the field. And how I like to run the spin, I don't like to step to then spin. Cause I want them to be a surprise. Like basketball again, I can't play basketball. But when you see these guys come and they spin, it's all fluid.
A lot of dudes just wanna.
Yeah.
They wanna do that. I'm here. Look, I tap my hands off. Look. See that? So now bring them hands back. Bring back in. I'm gone. Yeah. Keep it real tight.
This situation right here on the offensive lineman is death. Like,
you're right.
It's over. Like, I'd rather be 10 yards up the field. I'd rather be 10 yards up the field like this than to be at the quarterback and the quarterback standing behind him and we like this. The tight end university and, you know, all the masterminds, man. But we know where it started at, man, with you guys, man, with the rushers, man. Hey, ground up, what you do?
All right, Marcus, we got some people saying, why is Von sharing his secrets to all that success? But what do you make of these guys helping each other out?
It's amazing, man. It's amazing to see Von, and amazing to see D. Ware, who I played with in Dallas for 8 years. These guys are passing knowledge because it elevates the position, right? And as the position elevates, the money elevates. The more and more you have more pass rushers, there's a premium put on that because obviously Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, former Super Bowl champions, they added value to the rush position. Not like it needed it, but as the money goes up, these guys are sharing experiences, sharing little tidbits, and understanding that the more and more pass rushers that they have in the NFL, the better they are when they go to the table. That's number one. Number two, playing with D-Ware, he's a teacher. That is what he loves to do. He loves teaching the position. I just don't know why he's not telling everybody I taught him every damn thing he know about playing football from day one. But we'll get on the phone and have a conversation about that. But realistically, man, both of those, I think it's great that they do it. You get amongst your peers, and your peers are the people that you really want respect from. And the fact that those guys show up for Von Miller, that's a big deal. And it's great what they're doing. It's elevating the position.
And by the way, you can't tell me that DeMarcus Ware couldn't give some team 25 snaps this Sunday if there was a game. He's keeping himself in great shape. But Swaggy, we'll go right back to you.
For 100%.
What are some of your favorite pass rush moves of all time when you think about the great rushers?
Listen, man, it was amongst all of us in the NFL. Dwight Freeney and his spin move. And I'm going to call it the Freeney from now on. From NFL Live, this will forever be known as the Freeney. He had arguably the best spin move in the history of the NFL. For a guy to be able to do that, turn his back to the line of scrimmage, it's a lot of defensive line coaches in the NFL that when you try to spin and get caught up, they tell you, man, you ain't Dwight Freeney. Don't try that. He was so low into the ground and able to finish these rushes. And the ultimate, the guy that made me want to play football, I looked up to, I tried to emulate Reggie White and the hump move. It's the best move ever in the NFL from a defensive lineman. Reggie White was so strong, but people forget the speed in which he came off the edge. It was more about the speed than the strength. Get offensive linemen to retreat. Act like you're about to bull rush them, make them sit down, and then Reg would hump them and get to the quarterback. He was the beast, the minister of defense. It's a lot of his underlings still playing in the NFL, still trying to do that move. We just don't have it like Reggie had it. RIP to the GOAT, man.
That's right. Often imitated, never duplicated. But, Mina, as we think about the pass rushing summit and the possibility of finding the next great pass rusher, is there a name that might come to mind for you?
There's a couple, Field. I mean, you know, we see some of the names of guys who have gone to Von Miller's summit, Clayus Campbell, Bradley Chubb, and Ngakoue. We know them. So who's the next generation? I was looking at some of the guys who went this year. A name that jumped out to me was Rashawn Gary out of Green Bay. First-round draft pick, got off to a bit of a slow start, I think, to his NFL career. But you really saw him starting to come on towards the end of the season last year. Explosive, freak athlete, particularly against the Rams. In the playoffs, I believe he had 1.5 sacks, and you saw the potential there playing opposite Za'Darius Smith, what he could mean to that defense. Another Michigan man who was also at the summit, Josh Uche in New England, I think is going to have a huge year. So he was injured last season, played limited snaps, bit of a tweener coming out of college, didn't have a ton of pass rush production, so he's kind of a question mark at Michigan, but what's not a question mark to me is the explosive ability, the speed, the flexibility, which is a Von Miller hallmark. I think this guy has sky-high potential, and playing next to Dont'a Hightower and Kyle Van Noy is going to be huge for unlocking him this season in New England.
Yeah, the Patriots certainly feel like their defense should be much, much better this year, and a big part of that will be Josh Uche, who had just one sack last season. I got a feeling that number could skyrocket this upcoming year.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The competition is truly open.
You get better with competition.
Care deeply about Jimmy, but when Trey's ready, he's ready.
All you can really ask for is the opportunity.
In New England, it's truly a competition.
You'll be a fool not to think that I don't want to be a starter.
If Mac outplays him, Cam will be standing right over here next to Bill.
Andy is our starter, and Justin's our number two.
I've been in a situation like this before.
I think Phil should start day one.
Rookie quarterback competitions will be one of the biggest storylines as we head towards training camp, and we're going to play a little game called Something, Nothing, Everything, with some recent comments related to these rookie signal callers. We'll start with Bears rookie Justin Fields, who said he will report to camp 2 weeks early. Quote, for me personally, I have to do something football related, whether it's studying my plays for 45 minutes, an hour, or working out. I have to do something to feel like I'm being productive because I love to feel like I'm being productive, and I don't like feeling like I'm being lazy because that's one thing I can control is my work ethic. All right, Swagoo, we'll start with you. Something, nothing, or everything here from Justin Fields.
In the famous words of one of my favorite artists, Young Jeezy, I put that on everything. It's everything, man. I mean, look, Justin Fields understands that if he can grasp this playbook and he's ready to be the signal caller, his talent is way beyond what Andy Dalton can offer to the Chicago Bears. The only thing is Andy Dalton has experience over him. So showing up 2 weeks early, getting ready, doing something mentally every day. And I know people at home, that's what the hell he should be doing. They paying him millions of dollars. Well, the reality is all of them don't. All right, so Justin Fields having this type of attitude, this type of mentality, he understands and sees what a lot of other people see, the fact that he could take over this starting role as long as he knows how to go through this playbook and is ready to execute the plays that are called.
You know, it reminded me a little bit. Last summer I was talking to Jalen Hurts' personal quarterback coach, Quincy Avery, works with a lot of guys. And we're talking about what Hurts is doing because he's not going to play. Carson Wentz is there. He said, we're trying to steal every rep. You know, sit behind him, right, and follow along as he's doing everything because you really don't know when you're going to get your chance to get in there. So Hurts was thinking along those lines. It sounds like Fields is thinking along those lines. And the other huge thing is once he is the starter, he's going to have to look around that huddle at guys who believe in him. So being there and being around and being a presence in that building is going to matter for when ultimately the job does end up being his, because the guys in that huddle are not going to be looking at a stranger. They're going to be looking at a guy whose leadership and work ethic they've already had a chance to watch.
Yeah, give me week one for Justin Fields starting. Not that anybody asked me for my opinion. Another rookie who is a quarterback with a new team is Trey Lance, of course, with the 49ers. But head coach Kyle Shanahan likes what he saw out of his veteran quarterback, saying, quote, I think Jimmy, meaning Jimmy Garoppolo, had his best spring since we've had him. I thought Jimmy came in really good shape, really locked in, a good place physically and mentally. And I thought he had as good of OTAs as he's had. Graz, we go right back to you. Is this something, nothing, or everything?
I say nothing because I don't think there's anything new here, right? We know that the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan, like Jimmy Garoppolo, think they can win with him, have been to a Super Bowl with him as long as he stays healthy. But the reason Trey Lance is there is mainly because Garoppolo hasn't stayed healthy. So really nothing that happens in OTAs is going to determine the Garoppolo situation. It's when Lance is ready, they're going to end up having to ship Jimmy G out of town, whether that's August or October or next March. It just doesn't, it's not going to depend on how good Jimmy G looks in OTAs. It's just going to depend on when Lance is ready and when they're ready to make that transition to their future at quarterback.
Yeah, I think it's something only insofar as Kyle Shanahan would love for the rest of the NFL to believe that they love Jimmy Garoppolo and that he looks great. And he's got a nice QB here, and it would be a shame if someone traded for him. The reality is they traded away their future for Trey Lance to be their starter. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that he starts week one, but in my mind, that is predicated on what Trey Lance does this summer, not on what Jimmy Garoppolo does. They know who Jimmy Garoppolo is. Trey Lance is still a raw quarterback who has not, you know, played that many reps, frankly. And I think that's what they need to see out of Trey before giving him the green light to start.
You know, y'all ever been in one of those relationships where it's coming to an end and your partner has broke up with you, but they tell you, you are such a nice person and you're beautiful and I wish you so much success going forward. I don't want to hear that. You just broke up with me. That's what Shanahan is doing. He's trying to ease the blow. They understand. Like, I get it. They may need Jimmy G and all of this whatever. He took Trey Lance third overall in the NFL draft. Jimmy G knew that day, no matter what he did, looking good in OTAs or having success, he was getting the hell up out of there. So that's all Jimmy G waiting on. It's just great that they could have a great relationship after the breakup. That's all this is.
You know, honeymoons are usually where you start a relationship. This is like a closing honeymoon for Jimmy G and Kyle Shanahan. I see what you're getting at.
It is.
Swagoo. All right, let's move forward to another quarterback. The last.
I don't want you no more, but you're a great guy.
Here's what Bill Belichick had to say about Mac Jones. Quote, I think Mac has a pretty good understanding of the things that we do. He has to go out there and do them and get more comfortable with them, so it's a process. Certainly giving his very best effort to do everything we've asked him to do it, and the way we've asked him to do it, which is a great place to start. He's earned a lot of respect for that, but he has a long way to go. All right, Mina, is this something, nothing, or everything?
I'm actually going to go with something because there is a lot of honesty in that quote. Maybe a little bit too much honesty if Bill was in the sort of relationship that Marcus is describing, because you don't want to tell your partner you got a long way to go, which is what he just said about Mac Jones. I think it's the truth. I also think in New England, there is a genuine quarterback competition. I've said this since they drafted Mac Jones. I continue to believe it. It's not like these other towns where I do believe they want the rookies to start as soon as possible. I think Bill really wants to see how it plays out this summer, see how quickly Mac picks up the offense, whether Cam Newton looks more accurate than he did last season, and then he's going to make his decision in August.
Listen, this is too, Mina, and you make a great point, but I'm going to go and make a basketball analogy, right? John Stockton is a Hall of Famer, one of the best point guards to ever play the game. John Stockton never went out and averaged 30 a night. He never did that. That's what Mac Jones is going to be for the New England Patriots. And Bill Belichick cannot wait until he just gets a point guard at the position to facilitate and let everybody else make plays. That's based on what they did this offseason. I'm not saying Cam can't do it, but he didn't do it last year. So we'll see how this training camp goes. But Mac Jones was drafted by the New England Patriots to be a point guard, not to be a 4,000 or 5,000 yard passer a year. Take care of the football, get it in our playmakers' hands. That's how we know the formula of success to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, so if it doesn't work out, they can just trade him to the 76ers, I think, who are in desperate need at that position. Look, I think Mina's absolutely right. I think it is a quarterback competition in New England, and I think, you know, Mac Jones has to beat out Cam Newton. Now you could say, oh, well, the way Cam played last year, how hard is that going to be? But the Patriots do like Cam Newton, and they think he's capable of more than he showed last year. So I do think they're going to be watching this closely all throughout camp. I think Jones has a fair shot to win the job, but I don't know that it's a sure thing. Cam could still come on and hold on to it.
Yeah, Dan, I think it's worth noting. I think you're right. I'm not calling it a likelihood necessarily, but there's a non-zero chance that Cam Newton looks a lot better this year with a full offseason, full health and understanding of the playbook than he did last year when things cratered in a hurry.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Top-ranked boxing Saturday night from Las Vegas. Former lightweight champ Vasily Lomachenko makes his return to the ring against Masayoshi Nakatani. The main card starts at 10 Eastern on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. This week, some of the NFL's elite tight ends are gathering in Nashville for Tight End University, a way for these players to share skills and tips on how to improve their game. Earlier today on First Take, George Kittle spoke on the importance of the position.
There's a lot of teams that say, well, we can sacrifice at the tight end position if we have elite wide receivers, we have elite running backs, an elite quarterback, and elite left tackle. But if you look at the past, like, I don't know, 10 years, every team that's been in, like, Super Bowl contention has had an elite tight end on the field. I mean, like, look what the Patriots did with Gronk. Look what the Chiefs are doing with Kelce. You know, we're trying to get back, but we were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Like, the Packers have been in the NFC Championship game back-to-back years. Like, the teams that are playing at elite levels have elite tight ends that are making plays for them on a consistent basis.
It's clear to see how the tight end position has evolved over the years. Since 2011, there have been 22 instances of a tight end gaining 1,000 receiving yards in a season, up from just 15 times in the previous 20 years combined. Travis Kelce and Darren Waller both had over 1,000 yards last season, ranking in the top 10 amongst all players, regardless of position. All right, so Swagoo, how has the position evolved in the offensive scheme of things around the NFL?
Yeah, somewhere along the line, people figured out that these guys are damn near impossible to guard, especially when you have people on the outside of them that can make plays as well. And then it became about those guys being prolific in the red zone and being able to create mismatches there. I think about Rudolph against the New Orleans Saints catching a game winner. You think about Travis Kelce getting the Kansas City Chiefs going. Obviously, Kittle and his ability to work not only the middle of the field, but even spreading these guys out. Listen, this ain't about blocking no more, damn it. They bring in an extra offensive lineman for that. They want these guys to catch passes and touchdowns. Blocking is an added thing that's just great to have. But when you look at these players that we mentioned in Kelce and Kittle, who can block, I'm not saying they can't, okay? But they ain't getting paid $15 million to make sure the running back clean. They getting paid that type of money to go over 1,000 to be red zone guys that will devastate you, and then middle of the field workers when you get them matched up either on linebackers or safeties. On safeties, the safeties are giving up size majority of the time, and the linebackers just don't have that athletic ability, some of them, to stay with those guys, especially when they're running option routes, when they have two-way goals. Listen, I played with one of the greatest tight ends to ever play the game, Jason Witten. Jason Witten ain't as athletic as me right now, but he understood the position, understood how to work the middle of the field, and he took advantage of size matchups against safeties and linebackers. He's going to get a gold jacket because of it. He was one of those guys, him, Tony Gonzalez, all of these guys being responsible for where this position is right now. And now these guys are taking it to another level. They're going for 1,000 like it ain't nothing.
I think it's a lot about coaches and offensive coordinators just finding and exploring and developing different ways to use these guys. Think about this. There were three wide receivers taken in the top 10 in this year's draft. The Atlanta Falcons, who knew they were a month away from trading Julio Jones, left all those guys on the board and picked a tight end, Kyle Pitts, because they look at him as a guy that can help them replace a lot of the things Julio Jones can do. Yes, they took Calvin Ridley in the first round a couple of years back, but this is a player that they really feel can be a matchup dominator in a way that Julio Jones was throughout his career there. So, Kittle's a dominator as a run blocker, and I think that's well known around the league. But you're right, Marcus, he's getting paid because of the way he catches the ball and scores touchdowns. And I think that's the first thing coaches are thinking of when they look at these star tight ends now.
Yeah, it feels like the word we look for often with these tight ends is unicorns. And Mina, we were just talking about Kyle Pitts, as Graz alluded to, who's going to be an up-and-coming tight end. But someone who's already been in the league, who do you see as a guy that hasn't quite broken out yet that might be ready to do it in 2021?
Well, the way I see the tight end position field is there's a clear top three. Kelce and Kittle are one and two. You can put them in either order. And then Darren Waller's in that top tier as well. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick a tight end who I think is most likely to join that group, it would be Noah Fant in Denver. I mean, I know he was a first-round draft pick, but coming into this league, it wasn't a given that he would produce at the level he has. He was an incredible athlete in college, super fast and strong. But over the last 2 years, and especially as his NFL career has gone, he's really developed as a route runner, getting out of his breaks with the best of them. As a pass catcher, he's cut back on drops. And most importantly, you saw that a little bit in the highlights, the physicality after the catch. The broken tackles. He actually ranked second just behind George Kittle in yards after the catch per reception last season. He is a monster. And he can block too, by the way. I mean, I think he's the total package. The only reason I might question his ability to jump into that group would be quarterback play. But absent that, I think he has it all.
Yeah, he certainly does. And that's your projection moving forward. But it's time now for us to look backward, because there was a tight end who, in his heyday, could do more than just catch touchdowns. Take a look. How about this? Marcus Spears, number 84, baby. Recruited out of high school. And hold on, look at the bottom of the screen now. Watch the soft hands right at the beginning of this play. Swagger, you want to walk us through this one? Because this right here was all sorts of spice.
Yeah, this was tight end double pass. I told my coach we needed a spark.
Let me
throw the rock.
Let's go.
Where this ball land at. My man Justin Plummer. Yeah, we did all of that.
We did all of that
in high school.
Look at that.
That's off the back foot under pressure.
From the 38-yard line.
I wish somebody would have told me how much quarterbacks was going to get paid. All right? I still get thrown like that, guys. I'm trying to tell y'all about my availability.
That's 52 yards in the air off the back foot.
Wow.
I mean, that is unbelievable.
All my great coaches.
Mina, I mean.
All my great coaches told me the more you can do.
I mean, how many teams is Swagoo starting for next year if he plays quarterback? I can think of at least five.
I can think of at least two where he might crack the depth chart. I mean, he's got the power. I'll give him that.
I'm really impressed right there. You know, hey, listen, Sean Payton, Saints coach, is watching that film, the Mercedes-Benz Dome, thinking to himself, might be onto something here with you,
yes.
Swag. Who says big men aren't skilled men as well?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tonight is a big night for the NBA on ESPN, and it starts with SportsCenter with Stephen A. at 7 p.m., followed by NBA Countdown. Then we'll have the 2021 NBA Draft Lottery. And finally, it's Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals between the Clippers and Suns at 9 Eastern. Everything is, of course, streaming live on the ESPN app, so you can find out where Cade Cunningham will end up anywhere you're watching. You know, it was the offseason of running back extensions in 2020, and five of the top seven highest paid backs in terms of APY signed their deals last offseason. That included Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, finally Joe Mixon. That begs the question of which running back will be next to get paid this offseason. You know, one running back playing on the final year of his rookie deal and due for a payday is Nick Chubb. Since entering the league, Chubb is third in rushing yards behind only Derrick Henry and Ezekiel Elliott. All right, so Mina, if Nick Chubb is next up, where does he compare to the rest of the running backs in the league?
I got to take a deep breath and collect myself because I know what I'm about
What's
to
happening?
Do here, which is I'm about
What's,
to
what is
elicit the ire of Titans Twitter, definitely Saints Twitter, Giants Twitter, Panthers Twitter. I don't care. I think Nick Chubb is the best running back in the NFL, and I don't care who knows it. Here are my rankings. I think I have my rankings.
You do.
Yes,
you're good. Yes.
Look. I'm going to explain myself. Oh, man, the Panthers fans are going to be so mad. Okay, here's the thing. Nick Chubb, he is just the best pure rusher in the group. His power, his top end speed, his contact balance, his vision, all elite. He only ranks behind Derrick Henry in big play runs, which ESPN defines as 20 yards or more. That said, he ranks above Derrick Henry in yards after contact per carry and first downs per run. He is incredibly efficient. And, you know, he does benefit from playing behind a very good Browns offensive line. I think a lot of these backs you'll see play behind pretty good offensive lines. But if I was starting a football team from scratch and picking a back out of this group, I would go with Nick Chubb.
Marcus, I know that Mina's Twitter mentions are going to be on fire right now, but before we can get to Twitter, I want to ask you for your thoughts on this list. As we know, lists never generate conversation on social media.
It's my sis' list, and she know what I tell people all the time. If you don't like it, make your own damn list. And I don't like this one, MK.
Yes.
I don't like it. I don't know how you don't have Christian McCaffrey on the list. okay? We can debate about number one. I feel you. I understand exactly what you're saying about Nick Chubb. My guy would be Alvin Kamara as the number one, the best back. But it's based on different things and nuance, which we don't have time to go through on this show. Nick Chubb, to me, is the best pure runner out of the backfield, okay? But Alvin Kamara, to me, what he does for his team in all phases of the game, it is unmatched in the league. The closest guy to that, who should be on the list, Mina, is Christian McCaffrey. Now, if you're telling me you're taking in durability or something like that, I understand. But I can't understand CMC not being on this list. Okay, well, cool. We good then. We are good. But the bottom line is, when you look at 41 for the New Orleans Saints, he had a game with 5 touchdowns last year. We all talked about Drew Brees, and we all talked about Michael Thomas. The most consistent offensive weapon, the people that people feared the most on that team was Alvin Kamara. The people that people fear in this league out of the backfield or either catching passes is Alvin Kamara. That's my argument for him being number one. Now, we get into different types of backs. We have a different conversation. Nick Chubb, I don't have a problem with him being one. But if I'm taking a back first out of the guys that's in the league right now, I got to go get Alvin Kamara.
It's just like a lot of it depends on situation, right? I mean, like Nick Chubb is exactly what the Browns need. And, yes, absolutely, I agree with Mina that he belongs in this conversation. I think he's underrated. And, by the way, running behind a good offensive line was a 2020 development for him, right? He wasn't running behind a good offensive line prior to that. So he's shown an ability to handle a more difficult situation. You know, Alvin Kamara, would Alvin Kamara have flourished with a less creative offensive play caller than Sean Payton? I mean, you know, he's super talented, but situation matters a lot here. I do wonder where Christian McCaffrey is, but otherwise, yeah, I'm on board with the Nick Chubb love for sure.
Mina, you're a brave soul. I just want to tell you that because I'm not sure I would have subjected myself to the sort of
Aaron
heat you're about
Jones
to find on social media. And I think, by the way, people are probably wondering, what about Saquon Barkley? Well, the good news is Saquon Barkley recently posted to Instagram an update on his progress in that recovery from an ACL injury. And not that anybody cares my opinion, but he looks pretty darn good. Running and cutting and sand. You see him out here on the turf looking very explosive and athletic. His quads are, well, they're still really gigantic and huge. They might be thicker than my entire torso, which is why they call him Saquad in some corner of the internet. Time now for one more thing. You know, Tom Brady, the problem with him is nothing. He's literally good at everything. And Brady has taken to social media, which he does at a very, very high level. Actually, before we get to that, let's talk about Saquon Barkley for a second. Any thoughts there, Swagoo, what you saw from Saquon Barkley, who was moving around like a guy who is ready to be back in a big way this year?
He is absolutely devastating if he's healthy. And Lord knows Daniel Jones needs him.
Yeah, seriously. Well, Mina, good luck to your Twitter matches. Everybody be nice. Follow her. She's funny on Twitter. We're back tomorrow.
Please don't at me.